It's a Friday night, and joining us now is Amy Mirbeau. She is a professor at the University of Minnesota in the Continental Scientific Drilling Coordination Office. Did I get that partially correct, Amy?
I have the longest title of anybody I know. That's one of the two facilities that I work at, also the National Lacustrine Corps Facility. And I have a title that's about a mile long as well. But yes, fantastic. Thanks.
Is your background more rocks and geology? Is it biology?
It's some combination of rocks and water. So I study the mud at the bottoms of lakes. And I'm also, I should mention, the advisor of Shane Loeffler, who was on your show earlier. And I am also a person involved in flyover country. So totally coincidentally.
We were kidding around, Dave and I, that this has become our Science Friday evening.
Yeah. I'm a big supporter of that.
We are learning a lot this evening.
Good. So
you have been busy with your group studying wild rice as sort of the flagship, sort of the monitor of what's going on with the water in our environment here in northern Minnesota. No, I'm an English major, so I'm going to ask you.
I was an English major also.
Really?
Yeah, my bachelor's is in English.
See where you can go? You can start somewhere and you don't know where you're going to end up.
Exactly. There's not just one path that you can use.
Well, to start then my path, ask a really basic question. Define sulfate for all of us.
Okay, sulfate is, the chemical symbol is SO4, and so this is, it's a big component of seawater. It's less common in freshwater, but it can be, you know, there are some lakes that are pretty salty, but the lakes in northeastern Minnesota tend to be very low in sulfate. Calcium sulfate is gypsum, so wallboard. Is probably where we come into closest contact, or magnesium sulfate is Epsom salt that you might put in your bathtub.
So sulfate is in sometimes just out there. We haven't done anything to create it. It's just there. But here in northern Minnesota, we wouldn't find it as frequently.
Correct. You wouldn't find it naturally because the rocks up there, the small amount of sulfate that they have in them, they keep locked up so it doesn't leach out very easily compared to, say, in the southwestern part of the state, where the rocks are different and sulfate does leach out.
So it's really found within the rocks.
Yep, but it can also be released from processes that crush up the rocks. So mining is a big culprit that if even if these rocks have a small amount of sulfate in them, if you crush them up and leave them out in the weather, the sulfate can come out and enter lakes and streams and such. But also wastewater, burning of fossil fuels can cause sulfate to be deposited from the atmosphere, et cetera. So several different man-made activities as well as natural sources.
So sulfate on its own, not found here a whole lot, but when you do find it, it can convert to something we don't like, not too advantageous for us, and it becomes sulfite. What is that process?
So sulfide is the most common way you would sense it is by smell. So that rotten egg smell that you might smell when you're walking through a swamp sometimes, or hopefully not in your fridge. But microbes, naturally, bacteria that live in the sediments, there are a lot of them that convert sulfate to sulfide as their way of making a living. And so they're down in there in the mud where there's no oxygen, and they're taking the sulfate, stripping off the oxygen and converting it to hydrogen sulfide. And that's that rotten egg smell.
So they're just doing their thing. And then why does it smell? Is that like Mother Nature's way of telling us something, like this isn't something you really like or want to have around?
Oh, that's a good question. I bet here's me waving my arms about evolutionary biology. It might be the other way around. It might be that, you know, the things that smell bad to us are things that we've come to, that evolutionarily we've learned to avoid because they make us sick. because hydrogen sulfide is actually toxic to all organisms.
So if sulfate is just left alone in rock and no one really bothers it, we're really okay.
Yeah, and even if it's in, you know, there's a huge amount of sulfate in the ocean, and because there's oxygen in the ocean, those microbes can't convert it to the nasty toxic form. And so sulfate itself is actually quite harmless. It's when it turns into sulfide that it becomes a toxic substance.
And it needs that movement or breakup of the soil. Just the fact that it's in water, is that enough to start that whole process?
Yeah, only if it, so then the water can move into these anaerobic environments, these environments without oxygen. And so mud is a really common one of those. So the water, there's a lot of water in the mud. If that water has sulfate, that's an ideal place for those microbes to start turning sulfate into sulfide.
Now, this study of yours, it was within the northern part of Minnesota exclusively, or all of Minnesota? How big was your region?
It was all over Minnesota, and we actually went a few miles into North Dakota for one site, but don't tell anybody.
Okay, mum's the word. No one's listening, I'm sure.
Exactly. So we did focus, I mean, we had some focus in northeastern Minnesota because that is such a rich area for wild rice, and it's also a place where iron mining has left a legacy of a lot of sulfate out in the environment. And so these two things coming together made that a good place to sample, but we didn't want to only focus on the Iron Range or the Arrowhead. We wanted to focus all over Minnesota to understand what the processes were, because it's been known since the 1940s that wild rice doesn't grow in waters that have very high sulfate. And so what this study was about was to learn what that mechanism is. Why doesn't wild rice like sulfate? Turns out it's actually sulfide that's toxic.
Wild rice would then have been found anywhere in Minnesota, because that is the one, you know, that's your canary in the coal mine that set this off as your measurement. So you looked for the effects of wild rice around the state then?
That's right. So we went all over the state and tried to find water, so whether it was a lake or a wetland or a river, that had both high sulfate and healthy stands of wild rice. It was very, very difficult to find, which goes back to this research that was done in the 1940s, that was the finding, going around and looking at aquatic plants, so all plants that grow in lakes and wetlands. And the researcher who did that, John Moyle, who worked for the DNR for the rest of his career, what was then called the Department of Conservation, made this note that wild rice seemed to be very sensitive to sulfate levels. And indeed, nowadays, wild rice is almost exclusively found in low sulfate waters, and those tend to be naturally in that northeastern part of the state.
So if we looked at maybe the southern or southwestern part of the state and we watch over time, would we have seen a decrease then in wild rice?
Well, we certainly did, because the human impacts on Minnesota are really complicated because there are so many of them. And the southwestern and southeastern parts of the state have so much agriculture that it's difficult for us to know exactly what was there beforehand. So we know that there were lots and lots of wetlands and lakes in especially the southwestern part of the state that were drained, they built ditches to drain all the water off, which was very advantageous for growing good crops, because you don't want your land to be saturated with water, because then you can't grow good crops. So there may have been wild rice waters, wetlands and lakes and rivers down in the southwestern part of the state, but those have been lost for a very long time.
So it's hard to really measure that. We just don't have that, maybe anecdotally, but other than that, we just don't have that kind of information.
We don't. We could get it from core samples. And so that's something I would like to do in the future, is to study some of these places where there isn't wild rice known except for anecdotally.
If you're just joining us here in the Roadhouse in WTIP, we are speaking this evening with Amy Mirbaugh. She is working through the University of Minnesota in the Department of Earth Sciences. She and her group have completed a study on wild rice and how sulfites affect wild rice. She considers in their group wild rice their canary in the coal mine. So you're looking at wild rice, but there's other things, I'm sure, affected by sulfite. Can you let us know what some of those other plants or insects, animals, that might also be adversely affected?
Yeah, so we had some surprises with the research. We kind of suspected that sulfide was going to be the problem because it is toxic and because we knew that sulfate was there. This toxin in the sediments can affect all sorts of plants and could potentially, you know, affect other organisms, burrowing, you know, larvae of insects and things like that in the sediment. But the real impact that we found was, and this is where it gets a little complicated in the sediment or in the chemistry, but when those bacteria convert sulfate to sulfide, they release a whole bunch of other harmful elements. Or elements that can be harmful. So they release nitrogen, they release phosphorus, and so those are nutrients that can cause algae bloom. And they release mercury. And they also methylate the mercury. So they take an organic molecule, stick it onto the mercury, and then that mercury can go into the food chain. And that's the kind of mercury that gets into fish that makes our fish in many lakes in Minnesota have advisories for how many you can eat. So we discovered this from our studies, and this was a bit of a surprise, but is actually another huge problem with releasing sulfate into the environment.
That we have been hearing about the different tests, and they've done some of those up here and monitored pregnant women and whatnot around mercury in fish. And obviously, fish, wild rice, these are some of the key foods that we eat in this part of the state on a very regular basis. And I think people would be surprised to find out that's the source of mercury.
Yeah, and it is. It's not the only source, right? Mercury can be methylated by natural sources, right? Mercury gets deposited all over the place, but then it's that methylation step that causes it to go into the food chain. And so it can happen naturally, but it would happen at a relatively slow rate. Whereas if we put more sulfate into the lakes and rivers, it could happen at an accelerated rate, and we could have even more mercury in fish than the problems that we have now, and potentially algae blooms wherever this sulfate is being discharged to, even in lakes that don't have wild rice.
What is the conversion? Can you give people a time? Oh, if the sulfate sits there, it takes 2 years for it to become sulfite. It takes 6 months.
It takes probably a few days. I mean, so we have some research that was done on a research farm at UMD at the University of Minnesota Duluth by John Pastor, who is one of the co-authors, has done a huge amount of research on this. And they grew wild rice in stock tanks, in these big, big tanks buried in the ground. And they would add sulfate. So they wanted to say, okay, this one is going to have a level of 50, this one's going to have a level of 100, this one's going to be 300. And so they would go out every so often and they would test the water and they would say, oh, we had to add more sulfate. And they would have to do this really often. And so the sulfate was getting, was going into the sediments, that water was, you know, diffusing or washing into the sediments. And then those bacteria were just grabbing it up and turning into sulfide as quickly as they could. So it happens pretty quickly, and it happens in the winter as well as in the summer. It doesn't matter. The bacteria move a little slower, as we all do when it's cold, but they're still doing it year-round.
And I'm assuming the answer is not to just get rid of the bacteria.
I don't think that's possible.
Is there
and
a...
we wouldn't... Yeah. Hmm? Go ahead.
I was going to say, so is there a reverse process for this?
Yeah, I mean, if you can get a bunch of oxygen in there, it can be reversible. But then you have to wash the sulfate out. And certainly in some rivers, that can happen. It can go downstream. But it's very hard to, you know, if you imagine trying to use some process, reverse osmosis is one of the only ways that you can effectively remove sulfate from water, because it doesn't precipitate, that is, it doesn't turn into a mineral very easily. But if trying to use reverse osmosis on, you know, even one lake, much less a lot of lakes, is quite different. It would be better to just try to keep it out of the environment in the first place.
Yes, if it sits somewhere and all water moves, right? We've all been taught up here that everything's going to head down to Lake Superior, every lake, every river, and on the way it goes. Unless, of course, you're on the other side of the divide. But
yep.
It's all moving, and it's all heading in one spot down to the big lake.
Yeah, and on the way, it can have effects on, you know, lakes along the river, on stands of wild rice along the river, on wetlands where the water slows down and the sediments are kind of muddy, and those are ideal places for the bacteria to live and take the sulfate and turn it into sulfide and then also release methylmercury and nutrients. And I find it quite alarming, actually.
Now, as we were speaking earlier, you'd mentioned that Minnesota knew for some time that there was a problem with sulfate and wild rice, and now you've kind of solved that mystery. And that research was done quite some time ago. And is that what kicked off the fact that Minnesota actually regulates sulfate?
It was. Because John Moyle ended up working for the Department of Conservation, or the DNR, my understanding is that he was instrumental in helping the regulations be passed in the early 1970s.
Has that had any advantageous effect for us here in Minnesota?
I think it gives us a leg up. I think it gives us a little bit of a head start in recognizing that sulfate is a problem. And now I think this new research shows us that, you know, it's not just a problem for wild rice. Wild rice is extremely important to Native Americans, to all kinds of Minnesotans, to migratory waterfowl. It's just a very important species. But now we know that discharging sulfate to the environment can actually have deleterious effects for lakes and rivers well beyond those that have wild rice. And so I think we need to be careful going forward.
And to go forward, you have a new research project. What will be the focus?
Well, so we have a new research project, myself and some colleagues at the university, and it's called, there's a university program called Grand Challenges. We're trying to solve the big problems that we have in the world. And the focus of our research project is wild rice and water quality. And our methodology is first to let Native American resource managers, who are the ones who, you know, manage and deal with wild rice, and who've seen for many, many years, decades, hundreds of years, how wild rice grows and benefits and has problems, to let Native American resource managers really guide our research. We know that there are things that they would like to see done that we have the capacity to do. And at the same time, we're looking at cultural importance, at how we can potentially value wild rice and the cultural value in different ways than have been used in policy before. So it's really exciting. I was just up in McGregor today at a talk, meeting some new at a meeting with some new folks who we're working with, and there's just so much knowledge and excitement out there. It's an exciting time to be doing this kind of science.
Will there be any effort to measure those impacts even more, kind of like a dollar, which I guess is what you were just saying, but like a dollars to it, or it's not just wild rice, it's all these other things, and here's a measurement in our economy, here's a measurement in our general health.
Yeah, and we don't have economists involved yet. We did just meet with a Native public health group yesterday, and had a really exciting meeting, because there are all sorts of public health impacts on folks who, you know, eat wild rice, and especially who eat fish for subsistence, right? It's very problematic to tell someone who eats fish, because that's what they do, you can only eat one or two fish a month. And so there's a whole new interesting interdisciplinary opportunities for us as, you know, just physical scientists.
It was a weekly diet item for me growing up, so it would be kind of, I can see it'd be hard for a lot of people to not have that in the regular menu. For those people for which we have spurred a lot of interest this evening, what websites could they go to learn more?
I think that the best website that you could go to for this is the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's website. You should be able to just find it, the Sulfate Rule to Protect Wild Rice. So they have a whole compendium of all of the different work that has gone on over the past several years from the PCA. They also have links to several of the papers that have come out of this research, and those are all free. The agency paid for to make sure that those were free, that everyone could download them, and so you can get those there. There's also a website for this Grand Challenges research, and we just got this website up, but it maybe you could post it on the website.
We certainly can.
So people could follow this research as we go, and we're really looking for input, of course, not only from Native American groups, but from other citizens, residents of Minnesota. We love to talk to members of the public, because we know that this is not just, this is not just about science. This is about the economy and people's ways of life and all sorts of interesting conflicts and issues in northern Minnesota.
It's a way of life.
It is.
Amy Mirbaus, thank you for speaking with us this evening. Amy is from the University of Minnesota in the Department of Earth Sciences, just completed a study on the effects of sulfite on wild rice, and you have a next project to go with more for us to learn about, and we hope you'll join us again when you have information from that research project.
I would be delighted to. Thank you for the invitation.